It is not often that we feature a work of fiction on The Exchange, but this is one of those occasions we could not pass it up. The Child Finder is a novel about a woman who searches for missing children, in Oregon, in fact, and it is the work of a woman who does very similar work as a licensed private investigator, also in Oregon. Renee Denfeld is a writer of fiction and reality with three earlier nonfiction books and shorter work published in The Oregonian, The New York Times Magazine, The Philadelphia Inquirer, and other outlets. Her previous novel, The Enchanted, won several awards. Renee Denfeld, congratulations, and thanks for joining us on The Exchange today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's absolutely my pleasure.
So the dust jacket of this book shows a snowy forest, and the book was really born there in a sense. Tell us about that.
Yes, you know, as you mentioned, I live in Oregon, and one of the joys of writing this novel, actually, is it's set entirely in Oregon, and it kind of goes from these very treacherous, snowy mountain regions that we have to the sweet farm valleys to the cities. And the crux of the story begins in this very snowy, treacherous mountain region where a little girl goes missing. And the private investigator that you've mentioned, who is a young woman who specializes actually in finding missing children, is on the search for her.
Now, how did the story come to you in the first place?
Well, you know, as you mentioned, I have, like most writers, I have a day job. I think nowadays pretty much every writer I know has a day job. And usually it's teaching, but my day job's very unusual. In about over 10 years ago, actually, I decided to become a licensed investigator. And to date, I've worked hundreds of cases. And I went into work largely because I have a strong dedication to social justice issues, and I want to help people. But the work has actually inspired both of my novels at this point. And, just the experiences of it. You know, I've worked cases, death row cases. I've exonerated innocent people from prison. I've worked with sex trafficking victims, all these different kind of cases. And in the case of the Child Finder, I was very much inspired by missing persons, particularly missing children. And not just the cases of missing children, which, you know, sadly, I think are often, you know, they don't get a lot of attention, honestly, in the media. It's pretty rare. But, you know, the kind of the underlying issues that are brought up as far as, you know, how does our society deal with these issues? What does it mean to be lost? How much we can play a role in trying to find each other? There's just so many kind of rich kind of emotional themes there for me.
When you say that not a lot of attention to missing children's cases, I think about Kyron Horman and Derek Engebretson and cases like that were that were news for weeks and months, and in Kyron Horman's case, well, both cases, years.
Absolutely, you know, the Kyron Horman case. I live in Portland, Oregon, with my amazing kids, and that's, of course, I think there's still flyers around. It's absolutely heartbreaking. What's kind of interesting, and I think kind of sad too, is, you know, for every Kyron Horman that gets all this media attention, and I think rightfully so, there are dozens or hundreds of other kids that go missing without any attention. And the Child Finder touches briefly in a subplot on that particular issue, that particularly children of color, poor children, immigrant children that go missing can kind of do so without getting any attention or sadly, much of an investigation. There's cities where dozens of, for instance, black girls have gone missing. And I know from my experience, many are actually kind of kidnapped into sex trafficking. And, that doesn't get much attention in the media, and I think it's something that really needs to change. We really need to focus on those kind of cases as well.
Your sense of social justice, your concern about children like this, you mentioned adopting three kids from foster care. What motivates you, Renee?
I don't know how long you want to talk.
We have most of an hour.
I'm very open about this. I come from a very difficult background myself. I was raised in severe poverty and abuse my early childhood. I've written about the man I considered my father is actually a registered predatory sex offender. So I, as a child, survived, you know, just absolutely horrifying things. And by the time I was a young teenager, I was actually homeless. Because, to be honest, living on the streets was safer than being in my family home. So I was one of these people who, through, I think, luck and a lot of hard work, managed to fight my way off the streets and fight my way into a better life. And actually, I credit the local public libraries for this. The libraries saved my life. I spent almost all my childhood in the local library every day after school. And then later, when I lived on the streets as a teenager, I spent all my time in the library, where I immersed myself in books and stories. And, you know, those books and stories, I think, gave me sanctuary and, you know, a new vision. And actually led to me becoming a writer by just all that reading. So anyway, you know, I fought my way into being a freelance journalist, is where I started my career, writing for tiny little newspapers. And I kind of moved my way up and eventually in my 40s started writing these novels. So, you know, I went into the investigations, as I mentioned, some years ago. And so I think I just have a very passionate dedication to helping others. I really want to try to prevent the kind of things that happened to me from happening to other children, other people.
Has the book's title been applied to you, Renee? Have you worked as a child finder among your investigative tasks?
Well, you know, this is interesting. I have worked missing persons cases, but I have not worked a missing child case. So it is kind of interesting. I chose to write a novel about one form of investigation that I haven't directly done. But the procedural stuff, you know, one of the fun parts about writing the novel was being able to include procedural stuff from being a real live investigator.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Much more to talk about with Renee Denfeld. The book is The Child Finder. It is a novel set in Oregon by an author from Oregon, who actually is talking to us from Chicago today, but she's on her book tour, you understand. We'll come back and talk more with Renee Denfeld, and you can join us there as well. As we head to the break, let me remind you, it is day one, in the first few hours, in fact, of Fall Fun to Drive 2017 on the Jefferson Exchange. And as I speak to you at 9:19 in the morning, we have just crossed $12,000 on our way to what we hope is the culmination of a $200,000 goal next Wednesday, with 500 new members as well. If you can see your way clear to becoming a member of Jefferson Public Radio where you haven't before, we'd love to hear from you, or just get a booster gift at 888-552-6191 or ijpr.org. Back on the Exchange in a minute five. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are talking to Renee Denfeld, who has now published her second novel called The Child Finder. She is from Oregon. The novel is set in Oregon. A five-year-old girl disappears on a Christmas tree hunt at the heart of the book's action. 3 years later, a woman goes to look for her, hired by the family. Renee Denfeld is herself an investigator, although she mentioned she's worked missing persons cases, but not missing child cases. You can join the conversation on the Exchange as we talk about the circumstances in the book and the circumstances Renee talks about in her own life that inspires her work. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Given your work as a journalist and your knowledge of missing persons cases, I mean, I guess you could have gone for a nonfiction book. Are there some real advantages to writing a novel instead, Renee?
Well, that's a wonderful question. Absolutely, for me. You know, I did a lot of nonfiction work, as you mentioned. I was a journalist. I wrote nonfiction books. And for me, actually crossing over to fiction has just been just such a, I don't know, it's just been so fulfilling. I'm a lyrical novelist. The novel, The Child Finder, has been described as a thriller written as a poem, for instance. So being able to write poetically is just beautiful. But also, you know, I think there's just such a deeper level of truth that we can get to in fictions, a kind of this really kind of rich, complex truth of humanity that, for me at least, it's harder to get to in nonfiction, ironically enough.
It's interesting, too, that you are able to get in the heads of various people, and some of them really don't understand what's happening to them in the book. So it must have been a real interesting process of writing. And I'm curious about where it started. Did you start to tell the story of Madison, the missing girl, or did you start with Naomi, the child finder, or somewhere else along the way?
You know, actually, the first voice that came to me was Madison, the missing girl. And I don't think it gives away too much of the novel to say that Madison is actually still alive. And she's
okay, I'm glad you said it first.
Yes. You know, I think the reader figures this out pretty soon. And she's, little Madison is actually being held in a pretty terrible place. But in order to survive, she's invented this character called the Snow Girl, which is this fairy tale character. And she has come to believe that she's living inside of a fairy tale, and this is how she kind of explains what's happened to her. And that's actually the voice that came to me first, and I was so intrigued with the idea of this little girl who has escaped into imagination in order to survive her trauma, because it's something I did personally as a child, and I think it's a way that we survive sometimes. It doesn't get enough kind of credit or analysis, and it was just a beautiful kind of childlike voice that I heard.
And the fairy tales that she writes are punctuated there throughout the book, and it must have been fun for you to get into that mindset. I mean, obviously she's going through some bad things, mm-hmm. but the idea that she could escape through some fictional character is appealing on many levels.
Yes, it is, and it's something, you know, at one point Naomi, the older woman, the child finder, the investigator, says in the book, she says, "I don't believe in resiliency, I believe in imagination." And that's something I just found very poignant and true. You know, I know that, as I mentioned, books saved my life, libraries saved my life, because, you know, through story and imagination, we can envision a different future. We can imagine what it would be like, for instance, if we got a college scholarship or if we escaped the situation we were in for a better one. And that's kind of what little Madison is doing. She's using the power of her imagination to escape her situation. So I found it a lovely voice, and writing those sections for me was actually very healing, and it was also very uplifting, because she's just a tremendously courageous little girl. And I should add really quick, too, that there's absolutely nothing graphic in the novel. That was very important to me. It's not at all exploitative of what this little girl is going through.
No, it is not graphic, but it is suggestive of horrible things happening, too. So, I mean, there will be a bit of a cringe factor, I think, for some people here.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I think I certainly didn't want to gloss over those things, but at the same time, I didn't want it to be something. I would find it very hard if I ever felt that my work was exploitative to victims. I think even fictional victims deserve dignity and respect, and so that's something I carry in my heart.
Renee Denfeld's latest work of fiction is called The Child Finder. It is set in Oregon, about a little girl who disappears during a Christmas tree hunt when she's 5 years old, and it's about the woman Naomi who goes to search for. You know, this Christmas tree search in which Madison is lost reminds me so much of the disappearance of Derek Engebretson in Klamath County in 1998. Was that story on your mind? Were you aware of it when you were writing this?
Forgive me if I have that wrong, but was that a little boy who might have been on the autism spectrum syndrome who went missing when his family went to cut a Christmas tree?
I don't know about the spectrum part. No, I don't remember. Yeah. But yes, it was about going to cut a Christmas tree.
You know, I think, you know, I remember that case too, and it really hit me at the time. I had recently adopted my second child, and I think it was, you know, as a mom, you think about those things. And I think, you know, it might have been percolating kind of in my subconscious when this idea came to me. Because, you know, it's a very sad little case of a boy whose family went out to cut a Christmas tree in the winter, and he darted off into the woods and essentially disappeared. And certainly as a parent, you know, that's just the most, you know, terrifying thing that you can possibly imagine.
Which raises the question about how an investigator works in that space of such extreme terror for a parent. And in fact, by the third paragraph of the book, the investigator, Naomi, is thinking about the child's room. And by page two, we're in there. It has been perfectly preserved for 3 years. I mean, this is a very tough place for an investigator to work, I would think.
Absolutely. And I think that's something that the Naomi character brings to her work, and something I was, I think, able to kind of bring to the story through my own experiences. I think one reason I'm able to be, you know, very effective in my job is I'm comfortable with trauma. I've been through a lot of it in my own lives. I have to say that, you know, it's been 20 years now I've been a therapeutic foster adoptive parent, and going on this healing journey of my kids has just been the best choice I ever made. So But it's made me very comfortable. I'm comfortable with working with people that have experienced or are experiencing just severe heartache and grief and pain. And that's a place I can sit with people. And I think Naomi, the character, is the same way. She has this, you know, remarkable tenderness for these people, but she's also able to handle what they're going through.
Given how hard your experiences have been, and those of your children as well, I mean, and while you say you're comfortable with people who've been through trauma, I mean, any one of a number of people probably could just as easily have turned a different direction entirely and written some happy, upbeat book about, I don't know, some woman living in a big city and trying to find love and fashion. But you chose to turn toward the things that have hurt you in the past.
Yeah, that's a very astute observation. Yeah, I think I have. You know, for me, a lot of the healing has been with confronting or kind of turning into or even kind of burrowing into these things and trying to, I think for me, it, you know, in a deep personal level, it's been a way to take control, that I can now be the adult that as a child I needed to come into my life. I can be that person. So instead of kind of moving away or turning away from my past, I've kind of turned towards it and tried to, I think, kind of in a sense, I kind of retold my own story to myself. I took charge of helping other people so that I could, in turn, feel healed, which is absolutely something that happened with my own kids. I got to have a childhood that I never had by giving them a healthy childhood. I got to experience it, too.
Parenting them gave you a chance to see what a successful childhood looked like?
Absolutely. And, you know, I got to go to the zoo. I got to be tucked in at night. I got to experience what it was like to grow up in a happy, healthy, loving household. And that actually ended up being very healing for me as well.
Renee Denfeld, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an author and a private investigator in Oregon. She's written a book about another private investigator called The Child Finder. About a woman named Naomi who goes and looks for a little girl who went missing on a Christmas tree hunt 3 years earlier. You can join the conversation on the exchange. You have some thoughts about what we're talking about in general or about some of the things you've heard about us say about the novel. 800-838-3760 to join by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Now, we've already set a line here that there's no graphic descriptions of horrible things in the book, certainly suggestions of them and some horrible people, and it can be hard to take at times, but it's interesting. There is a matter of factness about it. I'm not going to call it sympathy, but it seems like you have some empathy for people who are capable of monstrous things.
Yeah, you know, it's such a hard topic, you know, not just as a writer, but as a person, because, you know, there's just so many terrible things that happen in the world. And, you know, it's interesting to me because so much of the novel is about how we survive when we feel trapped and how we survive when we feel lost. You know, I think right now in our country, a lot of people are feeling trapped and lost, and that's part of the reason the novel kind of resonates with them is like, how do we get through this? How do we find each other? How do we find ourselves?
Yeah.
And part of the journey for me, too, is how did we get here? So in my work, I have worked around and have worked a lot with people that do terrible things. And, I think there's been a hunger in me for understanding it because I don't think we can prevent what we don't understand. You know, it's very easy to condemn, and that's a natural human emotion. But understanding how these people get created, I think, is just so important. And so, you know, part of the novel does dig into that a little bit. Like, how did this terrible person get created? What made him this way?
Huh. Okay. Did you get into some backstory of some of the antagonists?
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. A little bit. You know. And you know, for me, it's really important. You know, I think sometimes we worry that like if we understand why terrible things happen, that somehow endorses or minimizes it. And I kind of feel exactly the opposite. That I really think if we're going to honor victims, including myself, you know, then we need to focus on prevention, not just, you know, condemning, but actually preventing. And so the novel digs a little bit into how this particular person, he's doing terrible things, but kind of his storyline and how he ended up in this place. And, you know, I think my interest is in, like, how does this happen? And I know this from my work and my own life. I think very few people are, if any, are really born monsters. I mean, there's so many factors that go into creating people that do terrible things, and there's so many things as a society I think we could do to prevent child abuse. And I wish we would turn our directions, you know, our face and hearts more in that direction myself.
There's a sentence in the book that just blew me away. It is better for a child to attach to an abuser than to experience the blind hole of neglect. Ouch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's there's some hard stuff in the novel, and as the novel kind of goes on to explain, actually, neglect is I think it's overlooked as far as its profound, terrible impact on children. You have children that in orphanages, for instance, in Romania, where these children were put into cribs, babies were put into cribs, and nobody would pick them up, and nobody would hold them. And they were given food, so they weren't denied nutrition. But these children actually would wither up and die because they didn't have human connection, and they didn't have love, and they didn't have anything. And I think the scientists have now realized that, literally our creation, our brains, every part of our humanity needs to have human connection to grow. And sadly, unfortunately, the only connection some children get is largely negative. But I think so much of the book is kind of emphasizing the human, how much we need each other, essentially. That is, I think, the basic ingredient of all humanity is our need to be connected to each other.
We're talking again to Renee Denfeld, the Oregon author of The Child Finder, a novel set in Oregon about a missing little girl and the woman who goes to look for her 3 years later. So obviously there are some things in the book make you creep a little bit. About the time our skin is really creeping in the book that we get to meet Mrs. Cottle. Tell us about her.
I love the Mrs. Cottle character. So Naomi, our child finder, who's this young woman investigator finding missing children, is informed by the fact that she herself was once a lost child, and she herself comes from this very traumatic background. And when she's 9 years old, she's taken in by a very wonderful foster mother named Mrs. Cottle. And I loved writing this character. Mrs. Cottle is this older grandma type, and she lives in this little farm valley in Oregon. I make up town names for my places, but this is kind of one of these older farming towns, kind of modeled after places like Sweet Home in Oregon.
I was shooting for Madras, but go ahead.
Yeah, you're very close. Actually, it could be Madras. In my work, in my life, I've spent time in pretty much every corner of Oregon, and that kind of obviously comes through in the book.
Yeah.
But she's just this wonderful older woman, and she has been a foster mom for many years, and she's now a widow, and she continues to foster children. And she's just this wonderful, loving, warm, compassionate foster parent. And I felt really good as a writer to be able to have a character like that, because in my experience, foster adoptive parents like myself, and we tend to get, frankly, kind of maligned in the media and in news. It's always usually really negative stories, and the positive ones often don't get told. And there's so many wonderful therapeutic foster parents out there that I've known and, been inspired by as well. And, it just felt really good to show this positive story of the power of love and the power of care and understanding with the delightful Mrs. Cottle.
She and the kids she takes in and other characters in the book, obviously Madison included, find some deep reserves of strength. I mean, do you think we often surprise ourselves, Renee, by how much we can endure?
Absolutely. That's very well said. As a woman, it's something I've thought a lot about. I think women in particular, we're often told to be scared. We get a lot of messages about how we should be in fear and how we should kind of constrain our lives because we should be afraid. And, there's some truth to a lot of that, but I think sometimes we're told to be smaller than we are. We're told to be, less courageous than we can be, and we get all these messages that kind of make us feel like we're not as capable as we are. And then, life kind of surprises us, and it might be that, we have our first child, or, we lose a loved one, or something happens, and we realize that we do have these kind of reserves of strength that we weren't aware of. And, you know, I wish that our society kind of recognized that more and encouraged people to embrace those kind of reserves of courage and our ability especially to reach out to each other and to help each other and to do things for each other.
Renee Denfeld is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her novel, her second novel, is called The Child Finder. It is getting some decent reviews. Her previous novel, The Enchanted, won several awards. We'll come back and talk more with Renee about The Child Finder and the process of writing it and what goes on in her real life as well. As we head to the break, I just want to remind you, it is day one of Fall Fund Drive on Jefferson Public Radio. We're seeking your support so we can continue to do things like talk to interesting people about the interesting books they've written. And we hope that you can join us in this effort with a pledge of support to 888-552-6191 or with an online pledge at ijpr.org. The goal is $200,000. We're close to $13,000 already. Searching for 500 new members. Don't know where we are on that count, but we have lots of enticements and opportunities for new members to get in on the ground floor, so to speak. Some people to thank on the way to the break. Debbie Derby in Mount Shasta, thank you for your pledge of support. Edward Hellman in Medford, always good to hear from you. John Urant in Ashland, thank you. Luann Auble in Ashland, thank you. Reed Cheeks in Ono, California, near Redding, good to hear from you. Jennifer Briggs in Coos Bay says, my favorite for years and especially in today's political climate, and an anonymous donor from Ashland. Thank you all for your support. We have many more people to thank, and we'll do so at the end of the hour. We'll come back and talk more with Renee Denfeld here on the Jefferson Exchange about The Child Finder when we come back in a minute 10. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest this hour is Renee Denfeld, who's a writer of fiction and reality and a licensed investigator in Oregon as well. She's written three nonfiction books, two novels now. The Enchanted, her previous novel, won several awards. She's now out with a new one called The Child Finder. As the name implies, it is about somebody who looks for missing children. Naomi goes in search of Madison, who disappeared on a Christmas tree hunt 3 years previous, and the details of the search and the details of what is happening to Madison, which we've already established, she does actually live through the initial disappearance, but you'll have to read the book to get the rest of it. 800-838-3760, if you'd like to join us as we talk about what human beings are capable of surviving. 800-838-3760, jx@jeffnet.org. to contact us by email. We were just talking about the things that people are capable of having the strength to survive, even though they may not realize it at the time. We're talking about this in the context of Mrs. Cottle, the grandmotherly type, who is Naomi's foster mother in the book. How much of you is in Naomi? I mean, obviously, they're both investigators, both had some rough parts in your childhood, but I mean, how autobiographical is she and where does that stop?
You know, it's something as a fiction writer that's interesting because, you know, there's a writing saying you write what you know. And so, you know, obviously I'm writing about things I know about. For instance, you know, the procedural stuff that Naomi does as an investigator is all stuff that I do. Digging up old records, knocking on doors, talking to people, all those kind of things are very much me. And, you know, obviously the book is informed by my knowledge about these different kind of things, from the trauma to foster parenting to all these sort of things. But at the same time, as a writer, it's really important to me to create these characters that are completely different and distinctly different people than me. So I really wanted to make sure that Naomi wasn't just me in a different kind of guise, if that makes sense.
Sure. So yeah. So something a little further apart from yourself.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think we've all had that experience where have you ever read like a genre book, like a mystery or a thriller or something, and there's a detective or cop in there, and he's like 6'2" and he has giant muscles, and he's, you know, he's like the sexiest guy, and he's great in bed, and all these other fantastic things. And then you turn to the back book jacket, and you look at the picture of the author. you realize that this, you know, this guy who's 60 pounds overweight and bald, and who knows, you know, how he is in bed, but you realize that he's written this completely better version of himself. And as a writer, I really want to avoid that. You know, I don't want to create a character that's just a fantasy version of myself. So I tried really hard to make Naomi into a different person, and she really came to be a completely separate person. I feel like she's like somebody that I might know, like a fellow investigator is how I saw her, like a younger woman investigator that maybe I know in passing, and you know, she is a good person, but she has her own flaws. She's complicated. She's struggling with her own issues that are not my issues. And that was important for me to, as a writer, to create that kind of character.
Could you get to a place where Naomi actually had some character traits that you might find annoying if you knew her in person? I mean, I just wonder how far you can move her from yourself.
Yeah, actually, that was when I knew I was on the right path with the novel, was I was writing a scene, you know, and when I'm writing, I feel like I fall down this rabbit hole. And my kids will walk in the room, and literally they wave their faces, their hands in my face, and I'm just gone. I'm in another world. And I remember I was writing one of the scenes with Naomi and her once foster brother Jerome, and who also plays a role in the book. And I just remember thinking, Naomi, you are just being such a brat. And I didn't like what she was kind of doing. And I realized then that, you know, I'm on the right track because I've written a character that's flawed and is going to do things that I might not agree with. So she has autonomy in the story, which I think is just so important, that, you know, the characters are full human beings.
So you let her develop in her own way. I've often wondered about that for novelists. I mean, because you're essentially God of this mini universe, and so you could make people do what you want them to do.
Yeah, and the hard part as a writer is not kind of giving them marching orders. The way I do it is I kind of create these characters and I kind of let them do what they're going to do, and I feel like I'm almost an observer, which is an odd thing as a writer. And that's why, you know, kind of going back to your question about writing nonfiction as opposed to fiction, I think fiction is much more freeing for me because these can be really complicated characters that get at more complicated truths. You know, oddly enough, by not being too constrained by like a narrow set of facts, I can kind of dig deeper into psychology and humanity and all these other things that go on.
Well, you know, there are people who do bad things in the book we've mentioned, although you're clear that you wanted to make this not exploitive, and so it's not a very graphic book in that sense. Okay. Certainly things are suggested, and I must say there's a real elegance in the way you turn up the creep factor without actually showing us the things that are going to make us creepy. Or feel creepy. But there are people who do bad things in the book, and also people who assume bad things of other people. And it's interesting that we have you on today because it was just yesterday we talked to a former prosecutor who now runs the Ohio Innocence Project, Mark Godsey. And some of your investigative work is in a very similar vein to what he's doing with people on death row. What have you learned about what people assume about other people and their motives, especially people who have less money and less schooling?
Oh, beautiful question. And, you know, there's a subplot in The Child Finder that goes to that. There's a young, poor black woman who's been accused of something, and people are assuming that she's guilty. And that's something I have seen so much of in my work as an investigator. And it goes to, you know, I recently had a case, for instance, exonerating a man who has spent 7 years in prison. And the state Supreme Court overturned his conviction because a judge kept out evidence of that he wasn't guilty of what he was accused of. And I'm sad to say, you know, as your conversation probably yesterday went into, this stuff happens a lot. And it's absolutely heartbreaking. And a lot of it happens because I think we just... There's, for one reason, people have deeply ingrained and often unacknowledged biases about people of color or poor people. You know, when we were talking a minute ago about fear, that's part of it. You know, fear, you know, it comes out in that way. People, for instance, people often ask me, aren't you afraid doing this work? I spend a lot of time in the poorest areas of the state, in the poorest areas of our country. You know, I go into trailer courts and I go out in the woods and I find people that are living in shacks. You know, I go into these places and people is kind of, they ask if I'm not, why, you know, aren't you scared? And I often think, you know, these people are poor, but that doesn't mean that they're bad. But those kind of biases, I think, are just so deeply ingrained. And there's so much of an assumption that some people are automatically guilty. And, of course, it works the other way. There's people that obviously we know in the news about celebrities that there's people that are allowed to commit crime after crime after crime and get away with it. You know, the justice system is, you know, badly in need of a lot of work. That's my professional opinion. Often it's the justice system can be very unjust.
Yeah, well, that was actually the name of the book yesterday. It was Blind Injustice by Mark Godsey. But let's take a call here. Let's go to Peter in Springfield. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Renee Denfeld, the author of The Child Finder.
Hi. Sounds like a wonderful book. However, I have a memory problem, and it's hard for me to read books, remember all the characters and my place in the story. It sounds like it would make a great movie. Are you thinking about running it by Hollywood to see if anybody's interested in making a film of it?
Yeah, thought crossed my mind as well. Thanks for that, Peter.
Oh, wonderful question. I'm going to cross all my fingers and toes that that actually happens. You know, for a writer, it's, to be honest, you know, people sometimes have an idea that we make more money than we do. It's an art. And like most artists, it can be a bit of a struggle. But if you get lucky and your novel is turned into a movie, that does change the picture. And plus, you know, I think it's also a very cinematic story. It's incredibly visual. I think it would make a wonderful movie. So I'm hopeful. So far that hasn't happened, but it just came out. So I'm going to hope, and maybe we can all cross fingers and toes that that happens.
So as you write a book, I've often wondered about this too, because as we read books, we have this sort of cinematic sense of who the characters are and can perhaps see actors in their places. Does the same thing happen as you're writing a book?
Oh, yes. You know, it's very cinematic to me. The characters feel so incredibly real. I become convinced they are real. The places, you know, the scenes in The Child Finder set out in the snowy forest just feel exactly like the times that I've been in similar places. It's interesting, though, because for me, the characters, I visualize them, but they never look like anybody I've ever seen or known. Mm-hmm. So I don't necessarily cast movie actors in their role. They seem like brand new people. It's incredibly visual for me.
And finally, before we go, Renee, I mean, you've talked about how books saved your life. Do you hope this book saves somebody else's life?
Oh, what an incredibly generous thing to say. You know, I'm already hearing from people who, you know, particularly women who have survived a lot of childhood trauma like I did. And I've gotten a lot of just beautiful letters already about how they found the book just found very healing and transformative. And because the book really does push back against the idea that we have to be ashamed of these things that happen to us. And, you know, it's very much a book about empowering people to heal and recover and to feel okay about themselves, including, as I often tell my kids, I love you for everything that you've been through, not despite it, but I love you for everything that's happened to you, you know, for everything you are, including what you've gone through. And so the book is really about that, about, you know, loving ourselves and loving each other for everything that's happened, and, you know, pushing back against the idea that we should be ashamed. So I hope that, you know, more people pick it up and they find that message in it, too.
Okay, so it's not necessarily about just physically finding children, but you can find their insides as well. The book is called The Child Finder. Renee Denfeld from Oregon is the author, and she's been our guest on The Exchange today. Renee, thanks so much.
Oh, thank you. What a wonderful, wonderful conversation. I so appreciate it.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure.